if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 309. This is our 2024 RBC Canadian and European Open Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both events. We've got strokes gained rankings for the European Open, form stats for both events, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for the Canadian and European Opens. All of that content is available across both events completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show that is out there already for the Canadian Open. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled, you're going to love this, chaps, A Personal Thank You to Steve Bamford. 5 stars. Hi, guys. I'm a long-term fan of the podcast, and I would like to thank Steve for his help this week. Now, not many people say that. I managed to back Jaeger to win for me at the Houston Open. I would never have normally backed him, but I made a note of the players Steve pointed out that were needing a win to qualify for Augusta, and Jaeger was one of them. I do remember saying that. I know Steve was on Scheffler, so I'm sorry about that, but thanks for giving me the guys that were desperate to win. Love the show, and good luck for the rest of the season. That's from Robert, and Robert is in Glasgow. Robert, thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff, Robert. Yeah, I guess the moral of the story there is listen to what we say and then pick the bones out of it and go completely the opposite direction. That tends to work.
Steer away from our convictions.
From memory, I said, I wouldn't touch any of these with a barge pole because I think that they're going to basically, you know, it'll all be too much pressure for them and they'll kind of collapse in a puddle.
Oh my God. Yeah. Is Steve the Jim Cramer of golf picks? You know, like guy who does all the stock tips in the States and they go the complete opposite of whatever he says.
It's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That is the way to do it.
There's something in that. We're all shocked by the death of two-time PGA Tour winner Grayson Murray on Saturday. Grayson took his own life. He was just 30. Our thoughts go out to Grayson's family and his friends at this most difficult of times. In the UK, on average, 5 young people under the age of 35 die by suicide every day, and most weeks one of those is a school-age child. The suicide figures in the USA are comparable, but in cities like New York, considerably worse. It is a worldwide problem and badly needs addressing. The key here is that there is professional, timely help available. Papyrus are a charity dedicated to the prevention of young suicide. Hopeline 24/7 genuinely is 24/7. It's manned by professionals, trained in suicide prevention, is free of charge anywhere in the UK, and offers advice and support to young people in crisis and anyone who might be worried about a young person. The number is 0800 068 4141. There are also equivalent helplines in the United States, Australia and Ireland.
Yeah, well said, Steve. A sad, sad week, wasn't it? And we had an email from Harry from Wimbledon, who we've talked about a few times because we met Harry at Wentworth 3-4 years ago, maybe. Had a good chat with him, and he emailed us yesterday to talk about Papyrus and the fantastic work that they do. So yeah, I guess the moral is, if you need to talk, or you know someone that you're concerned with, then there is help out there. So please do take advantage, if you need to, of the help and support that's out there. So yes, as I say, a sad, sad week.
Stressful, mate. Modern life can be very stressful, and things can get on top of us. So there is help out there. So just bear that in mind, people. Let's talk about some golf from last week. It was the Soudal Open in Belgium, wasn't it?
It was won
by Nacho Elvira. I did. I know I shouldn't, but I was watching sort of the closing four or five holes on Sunday. I was sniggering, as my thoughts were, I wouldn't want to be a spectator just behind the ropes on any of these holes, because literally everybody was driving it into the trees. It was hilarious, really, watching all these golfers trying to throw away victory.
It's a regular occurrence on the on the DP World Tour. Yeah, even worse when one of them's the player you've got backed.
yeah, of course.
Because, you know, for me, I know Thomas Peters started way off Nacho Elvira on Sunday, but he just about reeled him in, and Nacho was looking more than a little bit uneasy in the lead. And you get to the 17th, and yeah, I understand the you know, looking at Thomas Peters and the fit for that course and wondering whether it works. And I think his class was nearly good enough to win that. But he got to the 17th, which he'd birdied every day up until that point. And a birdie there puts severe pressure on Nacho, and, you know, ultimately would have made a playoff had he made a birdie there. And then, you know, you never know. You take your chances from that point. But yeah, as you say, another one, bang it straight into the trees, par there, par on the last, miss out by a single shot, which, not really the game, is it? Well done if you're on Nacho. I mean, it was a decent price, 80, a little bit 100 to 1 early on the week. But yeah, a little bit disappointing for me to see Peters fall just short. So adding a second place finish to your long list of second places this week, or this year.
Yeah, you need to, maybe we need to start a podcast, second place post-it note.
Yeah, it could be the one, couldn't it?
I actually went onto a second page this week because I had Scotty Scheffler. So I now make it that I've got 9 second places and only one winner so far in 2024. Oof. Which is, that's mad, really. 9 seconds with one win. You couldn't make it up, really, could you? Oh, Barry, what can I do?
Well, you got to win.
Now, I must point out, at Gambler Golf on Twitter. Now, last year, he put up Emiliano Grillo at the Charles Schwab at 80-1. This year, he put up Davis Riley at 180-1.
No way.
And nice. Also Keegan Bradley.
Oh, good week.
At Gambler Golf on X. That is phenomenal stuff right there.
That'd be a lovely little forecast.
I could never get to Davis Riley in my process. But actually, whenever I back Davis anywhere outside of the southeast of the United States, so, you know, I've backed him in like the Sony Open. I think I backed him once up in, you know, upstate tournament. Absolutely useless. Where he does his damage is all close to where he was brought up. And so I think he had a top five there. Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, fourth the year before, I think it was, yeah.
Bit at Myrtle Beach that you covered. But yeah, I mean, I can... That was literally someone, you'd go through a list and go, oh, I need someone that kind of finished in the top five recently. And it's just, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You weren't going to get to him statistically in any way, shape or form, which maybe suggests to me that I need to throw away all these stats that I do and actually just pick players off a list. But anyway, that is phenomenal tipping from Golf Gambler.
Yeah, really good, really good. Lovely forecast there.
I knew I was doomed on Skip. I mean, I was tweeting out that I broke Scotty Scheffler on Friday morning when he was clearly throwing in triples. I don't know, maybe it's all a bit too much to just think that with all this furore that's going on, that, I mean, it would take a man of incredible steel to just plough on regardless with your golf.
Mm.
And saying all this, the guy still finished second.
Yep.
With this police issue going on, he's just had the birth of his first child with Meredith.
I think.
And by the way, he's been lengthened to win the US Open now. Scottie Scheffler.
Marginally.
Well, 4-1, yeah.
His messy weeks are seconds. Every other golfer in the world would love their messy week to be a second, consistently. Mm. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets a week where he's got a little bit of peace and calm in his head, or just quietness going on, not too many distractions. He's just going to do it. I mean, are you just lumping on him now with the extending prices for the US Open or the increasing price?
Well, Paul and I pulled together our US Open research preview last week, and I went through the details of Pinehurst. And this is nothing new. I think we've discussed it on the pod before. If you're looking for a course that would suit Scottie Scheffler, it's kind of up there with a TPC Sawgrass or a state, you know, the or TPC Scottsdale, where he seems to win every year. Basically, straight long driving. The more greens you hit, the better chance you've got, because these greens, it's a Donald Ross design, so it features the Donald Ross upturn saucer. You know, it's repelling approach shots. And the other thing with Scheffler, as we know, is his around the green game is just phenomenal. So it kind of screams Scottie Scheffler. There is another one in my mind when I was going through the stats of Martin Kaymer and how he won that was screaming at me as well, that he's a kind of modern-day Scottish, modern-day Martin Kaymer. I'm not going to broadcast that name just yet because I want to see how he does at Memorial next week.
Mm.
But he has been showing some serious signs of recovery recently. But yeah, Scheffler last week, 7th off the tee. The weakness was the approach play. 18th. Weakness. He was 18th in the field. 12th for around the green. He was 5th for tee to green. And again, with Scotty, still positive with the putter. He gained 0.9 strokes per round with the putter. It wasn't the putter that let him down last week. It was actually the approach play.
Yeah, the irons.
It was the distance control.
Mm.
The amount of times I saw Scotty Scheffler 32 feet from the hole, 35 feet.
Yep.
Davis Riley, to be fair, the guy, he was phenomenal last week. Absolutely phenomenal. His game was really, really strong. He was leading by 7 on Saturday and had a bit of a meltdown on the back 9 or around the turn. But apart from that, to actually go in a final group with Scottie Scheffler in very windy conditions on Sunday, just literally didn't falter at all, did he? First for tee to green. 4th for putting. Again, I did say with Colonial, and it was interesting, even with the new revised course, he gained 1.5 strokes per round with the putter to win that. You do need to be an exceptional putter to win that Charles Schwab Challenge that week. And that may be why Scotty finishes second, or at worst, third there every year.
Mm.
You can see he wants to win it. You can tell it's his hometown event. He'll get there eventually. He'll probably be odds on the year that he does it.
Yeah.
Anything else that we took from last week in terms of the golf, or should we move on to this week?
No, I don't think so. Let's crack on, shall we?
Do you want to lead with the European Open, Paul, in Germany?
Yeah, can do. Yes, off to Germany for what used to be the Porsche European Open, but there's no sign of their sponsorship this year. Perhaps the marketing budget has been cut by Porsche for this season. Who knows? Anyway, for all intents and purposes, it's the same event, just a slightly amended name. Jordan Smith is the 20-1 favourite for this week. Jordan Smith's absolutely unshakable at the top of those markets. Despite what's he have to do?
What does he have to do to lengthen in price, that guy?
I don't know. It's...
not play. He's always up there. It's amazing.
It's, you know, what did he finish? 71st, I think it was, last week from memory.
Yeah, but he did shoot the lowest round of the day at the PGA Championship on Sunday the week before.
Yep, that's it. But yeah, he stayed in the same spot. 20-1 favourite. Rasmus Højgaard's here this week, 22-1. Tom McKibben, 22-1, is the defending champion this week, Tom. Richard Mansell, 28, Bernd Wiesberger, Laurie Canter, 30-1. And then you got the likes of Alex Fitzpatrick, Keita Nakajima, Yannick Paul, around 33s, 40-1 bar those players. As normal, Ball Sports have gone 8 places each way, 5th of the odds. Betfred and Bet365 both have 8 place options this week. I must say, the Betfred prices on their 8 place market this week were really, really strong. And I ended up getting 3 of my 4 away with those guys. So if you don't use Betfred, have a quick check of their prices, particularly on the extended markets, because there are some crackers out there right now. They're being very, very aggressive with golf right now at this point in the year. Hopefully it continues. Now we're playing the Green Eagle golf courses. When I say courses, that's the name, because there are 42 holes here on the estate in total. And as per the last few years, in fact going back to 2017, we're playing the North Course here at Green Eagle, and it's an absolute brute on paper. 7,882 yards from its tips. Now, there are 14 errors on each of the holes, so they do have flexibility. Last year, it ended up playing around 7,450, something in that bracket. There hasn't been a confirmation of what they are actually playing this year, but it's still listed as 7,882. If they were to play it off the tips, then it would be absolutely brutal, I think. Pretty wide fairways, as you'd expect for a course that long. Pretty large, undulating greens as well. They compensate for the length a little, but there is water in play on virtually every single hole, so you can't be particularly wild around here. The main feature, though, if you look through the card of the course, is that it's got 6 par fives. 2 on the front and 4 on the back side of the course. It's the only course that I can recall. I don't think there's any over on the PGA Tour that use 6. I know there's the odd one that uses 5, isn't there? But yeah, 6 par fives. 4 of them are over 600 yards. One of them is listed at 705 yards this week. So if they play it all the way from the back, then that's going to be absolutely brutal. I dread to think, Steve, how many it would take you and I to get to a 705 yard par 5.
That's a very valid point. I hadn't thought of that. The one that popped into my mind is, on my previews, I actually note the acreage of fairway. Can you imagine what the acreage of fairway is at this place? My lord.
Yeah. Must be pretty big.
Brutal.
A pretty big area of land, as you say. But yeah, 6 par 5s. And of course, that's assuming that the DP World Tour don't change the spec 10 minutes before we start. But certainly that's how they played last year. I mean, that's not so bad if it's dry, but there is rain in the forecast. It's forecast to rain today on Tuesday. It's forecast to rain again tomorrow on Wednesday. And there's further showers possible during the event, particularly on Thursday and Friday. So it's likely to be long, and it's likely to be pretty soft as well. So it is going to play on the long side, or the long side of long. Wind 5 to 10 miles an hour, maybe a little bit more over the weekend, getting up to around about 70 Fahrenheit potentially on Sunday. Now, just to give you a flavour of the winners and prices and winning scores, we've got 6 renewals here back to 2017. Jordan Smith won the 2017 edition at 13 under. Smith was 40 to 1 that week. 2018, Richard McAvoy, 11 under, 125 to 1. Paul Casey won at 7 to 1 the following year at 14 under. And then, of course, we had a break for COVID. The Bullet, Marcus Armitage, won in 2021 at 80 to 1. That was a 54-hole affair. Cali Samoya, the year after, 6 under at 200 to 1. And then last year was Tom McKibben, 9 under, 125 to 1. So the last three, 9, 6 and 8 under par, but 80 to 1 or longer in terms of prices. So some juicy prices, certainly not a birdie fest. It's, you know, so despite the par fives, you'd expect the scoring to be a little bit deeper than it is, but really doesn't get out of control. I guess you'd expect the par five scoring stat to be critical, but again, it doesn't really bear out like that. Armitage, 3 under for the par fives when he won. Samoya, 7 under. Last year, Tom McKibben, 9 under for the par fives. Bear in mind, there were 24 looks last year at par fives. To shoot just 9 under shows you that they're tough, and they're often three-shotters, these long, long par fives. So I think just scrolling straight to the par five scoring stat this week might give you a slightly skewed view of what may end up happening.
If you compare this place to last week in Belgium, it's completely 180 degrees opposite, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And that was tight and claustrophobic, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you've gone from tree line to something that's a bit wider, but there is a lot of water in play. As I say, you can't just be flagrant here. You've got to have some element of control, so... that kind of bears out in the winning scores. If we're seeing single digits winning for the last three renewals, then it's not a pushover by any stretch. I think the key here is strokes gained tee to green. If you look through the stats, the strokes gained stats from the last three winners, that kind of comes through. Strokes gained tee to green, the strokes gained approach the two, I'd say, if you were going to start your statistical journey anywhere. In terms of approach, 11th, 2nd and 8th were the strokes gained approach stats of the last three winners. 8th, 1st and 6th for strokes gained tee to green. So both pretty important. In terms of off the tee, and I think when it's soft, that's going to be a particularly strong stat here as well. Samoya was 11th for strokes gained off the tee. Tom McKibben last year was 4th. For strokes gained off the tee, and I think that could be a really strong statistic this week as well, particularly with the pre-event rain. Other than that, if you look at the incoming form and course form, the winners, it's pretty mixed. McAvoy, Casey, Armitage all had a top 10 finish in the last start, but then you get to Samoya, you get to McKibben, and both of them have missed three of their previous four cuts, so nothing massive there. Casey is the only winner on this course who had a previous top 10 finish here. The other performances of the other winners was pretty patchy, or indeed they were making their debuts. So not one to get massively hung up on, I don't think, in terms of course form and even current form, hence the winning prices. Anyway, I'm back four this week. I've swerved the top of the market. I don't fancy any of the guys right at the very top. There's a lot of players, you know, as we've said, who tend to find themselves at the top of the market and just don't perform. Whether Tom McKibben can defend successfully or make a decent fist of defending for the first time remains to be seen. of course, he's got the game to match this. But now I've started a bit further down. My shortest price is Matthew Jordan, who's 50 to 1 now, best price, but generally available at 50 to 1. Tidy start for Matt, 16th in Bahrain, 4th in Kenya, 13th in India to start his 2024 performances. Missed the last two cuts then, or the next two cuts in Japan and China. Back to form last week though. Opened with a 64 in Belgium, closed with a 65. He was 5th overall. And as you said, Steve, that it's chalk and cheese, the two courses. And I think this course suits so much better than last week. So to see him play so well last week on a course that I think is going to, you know, come into a course that is going to be more up his alley, I think we've got to take notice of that. Missed just one green on Sunday over in Belgium. He led the field for greens in regulation overall on the week. Bear in mind, when Armitage won the Bullet, he led greens in regulation the week before his win. Tom McKibben last year, he was sixth for greens in regulation the week before his win. So someone coming into this with decent approach play, decent iron play, decent greens in regulation performance has got to be noteworthy, I think. Last week, second for strokes gained off the tee, fourth for strokes gained tee to green, ninth for strokes gained approach. That's pretty much a full house in terms of the stats I'm looking for. Averages 312 off the tee, so he's got the mumbo to perform here, I think, 22nd last year. And his irons were nowhere near where they are right now this time last year. So I think Matthew Jordan could get his maiden victory here this week. Potentially. If not, the next best for me is Guido Migliozzi, 55-1 best price. Now, he was really popular last week after just missing out at the US Open qualifier over at Walton Heath on the Monday. Played well there, shot 6 under in his second round of the qualifier, just missed out by a couple of shots. But went into last week's event, 24th overall. But again, some positive numbers coming through. First for strokes gained approach, fifth for strokes gained tee to green last week. He's finished seventh here at Green Eagle back in 2019. A couple of missed cuts since, but you kind of get that with Guido. He tends to be all or nothing. There's not much in between, really. Now, he hasn't quite got the power of Matty Jordan, but he still averages, 300-301 off the tee. Tends to excel on tougher tests as well. So you remember he won that French Open at Le Golf National in 2022. Always a tricky test over there. It's at Le Golf National and water in play everywhere, as we know. Lost the playoff to Richard Bland at the Belfry as well in 2021. That's another challenging test over there at the Belfry. So I think this could suit quite nicely this week for Guido. And then two more at longer prices. Brandon Stone at 100-1. I've taken the 8th place option with Brandon. You can get 110 if you're going to go for less each way places, but it makes far more sense in my mind to go 100 with 8th places for Brandon. 57th last week. Some good signs, though. It kind of hides what was our half-decent performance, I think. Shot 73-65, 74-66. So two decent rounds and two not-so-decent rounds. So his statistics for the week weren't great overall, but I think there's enough in there to suggest that he's not playing too badly. In fact, it was a similar story in China to start before. He opened with 74, then shot 64-64 to finish 7th. So I think he just needs to find that week where he puts three and a half really strong rounds together, and if he can hang on for the rest of it, then he could find himself in a seriously contending or winning position. 3 times a winner on the tour, one of them was Rolex Series level. So he's got the ability to win an event like this. 5th here back in 2022 on the course as well. So a bit of course form as a bonus. And the final one, Angel Hidalgo Portillo at 125-1. Perhaps he can take a bit of Spanish inspiration from Nacho's win last week. And I think if you take Paul Casey out of the equation, all of the winners here, they were getting their breakthrough win. So someone like Angel Hidalgo or someone like Matty Jordan winning for the first time wouldn't be out of kilter with the winners that we've seen here over the years. Hidalgo won on German soil back in 2021 on the Challenge Tour. Seems to be finding his feet at this level now. 9th at Ras Al Khaimah earlier in the season. 5th at the Johnson Workwear Open. 22nd last week. The stat that got me was that he led the field for strokes gained off the tee last week. 8th for strokes gained tee to green also. I think that's a good combination coming into this. 33rd here on debut last year. Something to build on for the Spaniard. But they're my four: Angel Hidalgo, Brandon Stone, Guido Migliozzi, and Matty Jordan. You playing the DP World Tour, Barry, this week?
Yeah, I'm ready to ruin one of your bets.
Well, go for it.
I started so well last week. Darius van Driel and Afi Barinrat came out of the blocks like just prime greyhounds, and then face planted oh so hard. I got excited.
Kiradek, didn't he? Missed the cut.
Yeah, yeah. I got very excited about the fast start, so much so that I commented into our thread. And all I said was I was happy that they had started okay and they weren't immediately out of it. Well, immediately van Driel went something like triple bogey double or something along those lines. So I've learned my lesson. I'll have to shut up. I liked the look of Brandon Stone, independent of seeing your tips. So I'm really sorry for that. He's dead.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a good price, Barry, I think.
Really good, for particularly on a course that's so long. Just immediately his name went, oh yeah, okay, let's have a look at that. And I couldn't believe 100-1 was sitting there when, you know, the result last week, if you just look at it on paper, the 57th finish, you know, but that's not his style of course. So yeah, I'm in for that. I think I'm just gonna sit with that for now. Nothing else, nobody else is jumping off the page, and if that doesn't work, then at least I've limited my pain for the week, or ability for you guys to abuse me.
Limited your exposure. Yeah, you could have the winner there, Barry. You could be a one and done, 100-1 winner. I think Stone will go far better than his price suggests this week.
Here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
Here's hoping indeed. What about you, Steve?
I think the odds compiler at Boyle Sports last night had some kind of fit, because at one stage he lengthened Sam Bairstow to 50-1, 8 places each way.
Yep.
So I had that.
Snapped it up.
He's playing some great golf, Bairstow.
He is, yeah.
Hitting greens. I wouldn't say he's the longest, but two tournaments ago, he was top. He was like 319 off the tee. So he's got some mumbo. So I'm on Sam Bairstow, who's trending very nicely. Every time I see a leaderboard, Bairstow's near the top of it. I know how golf betting works. Clearly, I'm very good at not picking winners. So I'm tempted to stay on Guido with you, because I was on him last week. And he was there or thereabouts come Sunday and then just shot level par.
Yep.
I might have to step off the Kiradek train, which worries me. FOMO.
I'm upgrading to a first class ticket now.
Yeah, get yourself on, Barry.
Are you going to go on Kiradek?
Now that you've left,
showing signs. I mean, last week he seemed to just be having a nightmare when he missed a green, but his approach play was good and he putted really well. He gained a stroke per round on the greens. It's just he seemed to be, when he missed a green, he was having a nightmare and just missed the cut.
Is he long enough for this? Or just about?
Yeah, I don't know. If you can average 300, bear in mind some of the players that have won have averaged that kind of number. You know, Samoya, Armitage, not the longest, tends to hit a lot of greens. So I think you can just about get away with it. A lot of these par fives are going to be three shotters. So, but if you've got the length here, I think it can't be a bad asset whatsoever.
Steve, will we just do Kiradek a favour? Both drop off him and let him have a good week.
Okay.
Free him up.
He could do with getting a card on some kind of tour. So he'll probably win this week. I'm going to go romantic as well. And I know this is going to end in shame when he's three-putting every green. But if you look at Ross Fischer's record in Germany, it's pretty extreme. Mm-hmm. He's had a third in 08. Second in 2010, there's a myriad of top tens, fifth in 2015 at the European Open, and second in 2016. And then recently, it's all gone a bit miscut, but that's kind of Ross Fischer. Last week, though, he was back near the top again, wasn't he?
It's really playing good quite for a nice golf. Yeah. Kind of dropped away. And if a bit he can find,
he doesn't, you know, he's your typical greens in regulation kind of guy, isn't he? which on a course like this could be like gold dust.
Yep.
So yeah, I might sort of cut the pound each way with Coral, 125 to 1, seven places with Ross Fisher, I think.
Yep.
I think that just about do me. What are your thoughts on Johannes Veerman? Is he not long enough off the tee?
Yeah, I don't know. I was on him last week, and I think last week suited much better than this, so I've left him alone. But
he's not the longest, is he?
No, he's not. No, I think really you've got to cut it probably 300 plus to really stand a chance here. And, you know, a lot of the players are in that kind of bracket now. So, you know, you're getting a little pedantic about dropping players just for the sake of the odd yard or two. But, yeah.
Well, I'm good at that.
I think, I think Veerman was more suited to last week. So it's a little disappointing that he, well, again, a decent final round, but he wasn't in position to be able to do anything until that point. So, yeah, I left him alone, but that was probably a good thing for backers of Johannes Veerman.
Shall we head over to Canada for the RBC Canadian Open?
Let's do it.
I always love this tournament. Fervent fans. And if you wanted a sort of point in time on the PGA Tour last season amidst all the political ramblings and live and this, that, if you wanted a pure moment of joy, I think Nick Taylor winning the Canadian Open was one of those moments in the whole of the golfing year in 2023.
Mm.
That crowd went absolutely ballistic to see one of their own. Was it since the first one since 59, or it was some ridiculous amount of years, wasn't it? 60 odd years?
It was a very striking stat from memory.
This was the stat that got me for last year. Nick Taylor opened with a 75 to win that. So he's clearly, he's took himself completely out of winning it on Thursday. So he must have gone back to his hotel another year. Then he shot 67, 63, 66. Pressure, right?
It's the way to do it.
We're not at the same course. We've moved to Hamilton Golf and Country Club. Clearly, this is a national open. It goes on a rota basis. We have seen this golf course. We saw it in 2019. I do remember it well. It was the first time that Rory McIlroy had ever played a Canadian Open. And he delivered. He shot 22 under par that week and won by 7. Yeah, he won by 7 shots over Shane Lowry and Webb Simpson.
Mm.
It was a good field that week as well, because I believe it was the week before a US Open. They've actually moved this back a week, so we've got the Canadian Open this week, and then the warm-up for the US Open is Jack's Memorial Tournament, a signature event, next week. Which will be interesting, because it's always good to see the very top players all in one field, apart from the live players, I get that. The week before a major, especially on a proper major tough golf course that we're likely to see next week. So that should hopefully answer some questions for Pinehurst the week after. Anyway, back to this. This golf course has had a renovation. That's all I keep writing over the last month. Oh, the course had a renovation. This one's had a Martin Hibbert renovation, who, of course, is very famous for looking after a lot of the Open Championship rota, of course, is over here. This is a Harry Colt original, so it makes sense. I think Hibbert is known as the Harry Colt kind of whisperer. So he's taken this course under his wing. He renovated it in 2019 after the RBC Canadian Open. I'm classifying it as a classical golf course. Yes, it's parkland. It's tree-lined. I wouldn't say it's Soudal Open from last week or Wentworth. It isn't claustrophobically tree-lined. There is a bit of room. But what is noticeable about this golf course? There's a couple of things. Firstly, plenty of undulations. Plenty of different challenges in terms of downhill holes, uphill holes. So that's an interesting one to look at. It's also extremely short. Now, Hubert has actually extended it, and it's a 7,084-yard now, par 70, two par fives. Holes with water hazards, 11. Number of sand bunkers, 72. Acres of fairway, Paul. You need to get this stat from your friends at the DP World Tour. Good, luck with that. Yeah, 38 acres of fairway this week.
Right.
What about the agronomy, I hear everybody say, Steve? The agronomy. Well, we're upstate, clearly. We're in Canada. So you can kiss goodbye to the Bermuda. We've got bent grass with poana fairways. We've got Kentucky bluegrass with poana and fescue rough. We really are upstate. And the greens have been slightly expanded from 2019. They are 6,000 square feet. You're going to love this. They feature V8 creeping bent grass. I always think V8 Chevrolet. V8 creeping bent grass. So the poana greens that we saw in 2019 are no more bent grass. The other thing you notice about this golf course when you look into the detail around it and take an aerial view of it, it's got lots of dog legs. It's got lots of bunkers at around about the 290 to 300 yard carry. If you can fly the ball a long way here in the air, you've got a significant advantage, because you're basically taking all of the trouble off the tee out of the equation. If you're hitting it relatively straight. So carry distance of drives this week, I think, is a number that's quite relevant. The amount of dog legs that, you know, someone like Rory will just be able to just go head straight over the trees, take the corner out of it, clear all of the bunkers on the corner and end up 80 yards from the green,
yeah,
or 100 yards from the green with his shortest wedge in the middle of the fairway. It's pretty daunting when you actually look at the course. So I think distance of carry, guys that can hit the ball a long way have an advantage here, I believe, in terms of the overall win. But all in all, it looks like an interesting course. Also, we have some history here about past winners. If we want to go back to 2003, Bob Twy. 2006, Jim Furyk. 2012, Scott Piercy. I was on him that week, 50-1. And last time out, Rory McIlroy at 2019. So if you actually want to look at golf courses where Furyk, Piercy and McIlroy have all played well, I've even got a list for you. PGA National, where they played a Honda Classic. For some bizarre reason, they all play well at Conway Farms near Chicago. Trouble with this is a lot of the current PGA Tour player list in this field haven't played many of these courses, especially Conway Farms. There's also Firestone, where they used to play the WGC Bridgestone. McIlroy's won there. Piercy's finished second there. Jim Furyk's had 2 seconds, 2/3 and a fourth. And yes, Jim Furyk and Rory McIlroy are probably completely opposite ends of the golfing spectrum. But actually, Jim Furyk used to be able to plot his way around a very testing golf course very well, as we know. And actually, you look at where Furyk and McIlroy have shared wins and top finishes, they're on a lot of similar golf courses. They just went about it in different ways. Another factor I found very interesting this week has been the weather. Now, I feel sorry for... Well, I don't feel sorry because I live in the United Kingdom and we're very adept at rain over here, aren't we, Paul?
We're used to it, yeah.
We're used to it. I would have thought they're probably used to it in Ontario as well. It's been hammering down, mate. And the first thing I did this morning before recording the podcast was just check what the rainfall was yesterday in Hamilton, Ontario, and it was 31 millimetres, which is over an inch of rain. That was on top of rain that they'd had on Saturday and a bit on Sunday as well. I think they might have even had some on Friday just to really throw the cat amongst the pigeons. It's this golf course, for me, is going to be at the very least receptive for the first couple of rounds. And even though it's had a renovation, and yes, it was noted on the renovation notes that they've put up to speed irrigation and drainage on the golf course, I don't think you're going to get any kind of sub-air here. So I don't think it's a bad look, you know, if you went to our predictor models this week, Paul, that have a fantastic variable on there about best soft golf course players over the last 5 years on the PGA Tour. As you can probably hear from the click of the mouse, I'm looking at that right now. And the number one guy, a score of 500 maximum, Rory McIlroy. Next best with a score of 310, Troy Merritt. And then a player here that I know, as soon as I mentioned the name here, Barry's ears will be intently listening. Kevin Kisner at 3. And I'm seeing Kevin Kisner priced up at 4 numbers this week. But he loves a soft golf course. And I guarantee you, if I built the predictor a little bit more and put on their short golf course, par 70, Kevin Kisner would not disappear from the top or near the top of the proceedings, because he is no par 72, 7,800-yard golfer, as we know. Another course as well, I should have said this earlier, Harbortown. Harbortown is another one. Scott Pierce is at a third there. Jim Furyk, a couple of wins, a couple of seconds. You're not going to find anything for Rory there. But there is definitely a look here at your typical kind of Plotters golf courses, a Colonial maybe, a Shriners at TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas, where they plot their way around there for a score. Even the Sony Open at Wailea Country Club. Scott Piercy finished second there 1 year. Jim Furyk's won there, finished second. A host of top 10 finishes at Wailea. Plotters golf courses, that can work. But when you look at Rory and you look at his history, he does tend to win a lot on bent grass greens. He tends to win a lot on golf courses where you can score. He's always said he loves attacking golf. And he also tends to play well on soft golf courses. So, unfortunately, I have tipped the favourite for the second time running this week. I cut him just a snidge under 4-1, win only. 39-10. They're coming up with some very crazy prices these days. I went 6 points to win Rory McIlroy. 39-10 with Bet365. I'll tell you what I noticed here, chaps. If you look at the winners, and I'm going all the way back to 2010, Branch Snedeker won here in 2013 at 14-1. Jason Day at 9-1 favourite. Dustin Johnson at 7-1 favourite. And Rory's won here. The Canadian Open I'm talking about. He's won both of his at 10-1. So there's no bigger winner there than 14-1. And then you go to the other extreme. Well, where did the others win? Well, Scott Piercy won at 50-1 the year we're on him in 2012 here. And then it's 66-1 Tim Clark, 66-1 Nick Taylor, 80-1 Carl Pettersson, 100-1 Sean O'Hare, and 125-1 twice Johnny Vegas at Glen Abbey. You know this, I've been talking about it all year, this... Anything 20-1 to 50-1 until this point of time has been a dead zone in terms of winners on the PGA Tour. It's a dead zone for this tournament and it's a dead zone in 2024. So it completely put me off everybody near the top of the market. Because historically, and just the way that we are in golf at the moment, they're not likely to win. And when you're seeing Tommy Fleetwood as second favourite, who hasn't won in the United States, Shane Lowry right up there, who's only won once in the United States playing on his own, Corey Connors, none of, and Alex Noren, who hasn't won in the United States full stop. Is it my imagination? He hasn't won since 2018.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, he was prolific over on the European Tour, as was back in the day. I think he won 10 times, something like that. But yeah, it's been a few years now. So yeah.
It didn't fill me with great enthusiasm. The one I'm scared of, and Barry will know this before I even say it, the old FOMO. I mean, I was talking about Kiradek earlier. The one that does scare me is Sahith. Who's actually been driving. The last win for Alex Noren was 2018, opened the France. And people are ploughing in at 22-1 like it's going out of fashion. So he's going to be a winner, but it didn't fill me with enthusiasm at all. This field, it's okay, but it's not great in terms of its depth. So I just went for Rory. We've seen with Rory in the past, when he finds his golf, he can just string wins together, yeah? It's a very Rory thing to do.
Yeah.
And the thing I've noticed about Rory is, it's amazing how straight he's driving the ball. He is driving the ball incredibly straight off the tee. I'm just going to quickly look it up. I think he's in the top 50 for driving accuracy or something like that. Which is incredible when you think about the guy's power and distance and carry. That's got to be, to me, when you look at Rory's history and you look at when he strings wins together, it's when he's just confident standing on the tee. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? That's his strength. The best driver on the planet. When he's at the very top of his game.
Yeah, combine that with a soft golf course and he's very dangerous, I agree.
This season, strokes gained off the tee, third. Total driving, first. Driving accuracy, listen to this. 27th for fairways hit. Driving distance, first. It's phenomenal, isn't it? And we're talking about a golf course where if you can take corners off multiple dog legs, you're sitting with wedges in the middle of fairway, short distances.
Yep.
On a soft golf course. If he turns up and plays properly, I'm struggling to see he gets beat. Just looking at the depth of field. So that's where I'm at. My next selections are far, far deeper. 45 and out from there. So I don't know if you two want to chip in at this point.
Yeah, I've got one at that sub 50. Odds dead zone bracket that perhaps isn't the place to be, but that's where I am. Tom Kim I backed yesterday at 40-1. Couple of wins on bent grass over the years, over not many years because he's not been around for that long. 11th into Sunday last week and then just didn't quite happen on Sunday. Shot a 74, so dropped down to 24th, but that's kept a lid in his price to a certain degree. And bits and pieces of form before that, fifth after day one at the USPGA, and again couldn't quite keep it going, but I think this shorter track suits his game much more than the PGA Championship did anyway. Shot the round of the day on Sunday at the Masters as well, so there have been some interesting little signs of form with Tom without him kind of stringing four rounds together, but I don't think he's far away. I think we're going to see him back seriously contending before too long, and potentially this week. As you say, if you take Rory out of the equation here, then there's not a massive amount below him, and to see the name of Tom Kim in the mix here wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. So I'm on Tom. I've got another one who's three figures, which we can get to a bit further down the track.
He was available first show with William Hill at 60-1.
Well, wow. Miss that.
Clearly, you look at that and you go, well, that's not going to last more than 5 minutes. But their initial market had Tom Kim at 60-1, because I looked at that and thought, wow. Yeah. And then they realised that like Bet Victor came up and they were 35 or 40-1. It didn't take long.
Yeah. That price would have been hammered.
Yeah. And they also placed it up at 5 places each way, according to the odds originally for the first hour, and then they swapped it to 8. But yeah, 60-1 was Tom Kim's price. Right. Barry, what about you, mate?
I mean, the easiest bet of the week was just to ride the Davis train and back Davis Thompson. I don't know why you both missed it, but anyway, that's one of my three bets. I'm going to stick with Aaron Rye. In an okay week last week, I think this course should kind of merge a bit better with his skill sets. I've got him going on. And then another one who's kind of flirted with the last few weeks is Grayson Sig. Seems like his things, you know, stats could be okay for here. Hoping last week just gets washed away and he kicks on here this week. And then, you know, obviously the bet of the week, which we found because of the soft condition, top players in soft conditions, Kisner. So I had to do a bit of digging around, but I found him at a fairly nice price of 900-1, 12 places, 150 odds on Bet365. So
just the 900, eh?
Just 900, yeah.
Where did he finish last week? He showed signs of life, didn't he?
There were signs of life, yeah. So, listen, it's an absolute hurdy punt, but
Kisner's worth covering on. So's Troy Merritt. If you can get a top 40 or maybe first round leader, something on Merritt, because he's always been the sort that doesn't go overly well on Bermuda grass, but put him on when the tour eventually goes upstate, and the upstate section of the PGA Tour seems to get shorter every year. There's less tournaments on bent grass or bent poa. That's where he thrives. Ches Reavie's another. You know that, Paul. Ches Reavie loves himself a bit of bent poa.
He does, yeah.
You look at his record around River Highlands. He actually won a Canadian Open at Glen Abbey in 2008 on bent poa, or bent. Reavie did. These ones, they just come out of the woodwork as we're getting towards the real business end where you're saving cards and getting into playoff events. I took Maverick McNealy at 40-1. I've always said with Maverick, he is such a specialised golf course player. It's unbelievable. I've actually listed all of his top 12 finishes on the PGA Tour. I know it's boring, but the longest I can see is a golf course that was 7,320 yards, and that was Detroit Golf Club. Everything else is shorter than that, or it's longer in yardage but was played at altitude, which, as we know, takes 10-12% of everything.
Yep.
So I'm on McNealy. The trouble with Maverick is that he's one of these guys that's pretty consistent with his strokes gain numbers. So strokes gain predicts and models or odds that are based on strokes gain will always shorten his odds. So I was hoping for 50-1 or bigger. I managed to get 40-1. He's now 33-1. So I got that with William Hill, 8 place each way. Maverick McNealy, I think this is a great golf course for him. 23rd at the PGA Championship. That isn't a golf course that's made for Maverick McNealy. Valhalla. And he was 17th last week at Colonial, which was his best ever finish there. The 23rd was his best ever major finish. There's something about Mav. I don't know if he's got a win in him this week, but this golf course could be made for him, in my opinion, just the shortness of it. And for me, I think he's more bent stroke Poana positive than he is Bermuda. Just grew up in California. Makes sense. Well, I'm surprised you're not toying with Barry. I might be able to sell you on this. Is EVR.
Yeah, popped a little bit. Come on, tell me more about him.
K Canadian Open. First thing that sprung to my mind is, in the field this week is the Canadian hero that is Mike Weir. So Mike Weir's on the property. He'll be playing the first two rounds before he misses the cut. He, of course, is the captain of the international team of the President's Cup. So it wouldn't be a bad week to actually be there on site and play some good golf. And the thing with Eric is, he's, even though he's playing decent golf, you know, eighth in Mexico, second at the Cognizant at PGA National, fourth at Myrtle Beach, the tournament Paul covered a few weeks ago, playing some great golf, that's all within the last nine starts. He's still quite a way down the pecking order in terms of President's Cup qualification. Don't quote me, but without looking, I think you'd find he's kind of 15th, 16th, 17th, something like that. So he's not going to get qualification unless he wins something or has a real tear. But he needs to play good golf to get into the President's Cup. I just think EVR, when I look at EVR and where that first win that he had in the States at the Barracuda, that was on a kind of medium length course at altitude, so it played short, tree line but not overly tight, some undulations on it. It reminded me graphically of what they're playing this week. And then you look and then you think, well, actually, he's played this course. He played it in 2019. He wasn't even a PGA Tour member at that point. He was just hopping across from Europe. I think he must have been close to top 50 in the world or something like that. And he was ninth after 54 holes, finished 20th. Mm. That week, as we know, Rory tore the place up. It was soft all week there. I just think that it'll go one of two ways with Eric. He'll work out either that Mike Weir's there and miss the cut, or it will inspire him and he'll have a really good week. And the other thing here is, don't forget, we're talking Eric EVR. He's got now two wins on the PGA Tour. So he's a known winner. 50-1, take that, with the William Hill, eight places each way. I went 1.5 points on Eric Van Rooyen. And there's just bits and bobs when you can piece together where he's played well and it kind of lines up with some of the courses I was looking for. Paul will tell you, I mean, clearly with his DP World Tour history, played a lot of his best golf on bent grass, grew up in South Africa, a lot of the courses out there fairly similar to this potentially. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think he's a bad shout this week. Eric Van Rooyen. So I'm on at 50-1. Have I sold you?
Maybe. Let's see. Yeah. I can't put all my bets on while we're recording. I'll have a think about it.
I also went wild and wacky, which isn't really me, but whenever I looked at the top of the leaderboard last week, I was seeing Hayden Buckley. And I kept scrolling on Odds Checker, kept scrolling. I'm like, has he withdrawn? I saw him at 300-1. I'm like, right, I'll have that. So 300-1 with William Hill, eight places each way, Hayden Buckley. I've gone a point each way. He actually grew up, his early days as a professional were on the Canadian Tour. So he's not as if he's not au fait with Canadian courses and even more importantly, Canadian agronomy. And, you know, I've mentioned some courses earlier that kind of correspond. He's had an eighth at TPC Summerlin, a second at Wailea Country Club. He's had a fifth at Harbortown. And that fifth last year at Harbortown was at a signature level event that had everybody in it. It was a mini major. He's also had a fifth at Narashino. As we know, tree-lined, claustrophobic, parkland, bent grass greens. So, yeah. I thought 300-1 on a guy that was finished in the top five last week was a very generous price. So I'm on him with William Hill, eight places each way, Hayden Buckley.
You killed the market with your 50p each way, Steve. He's down to 200-1, eight places with William Hill now on recording. You can still catch him in one bookie at 250-1.
Or eight places. I predict he'll either finish miscut or finish T9th. That's where I'm at with Aiden. Right, Paul, where are you at with your next tip?
I'm on Buckley as well, Steve. I think I think the price. No, I've got another one, but I think the price is well, the price was unmissable, really, given how he played last week. 300 to 1 just seemed far too long. And even 250, 200 now, as you say, with the extended places, is it was still, you know, you still potentially get a good run for your money there. The one I've backed, aside from that, is Matt Kuchar. Now, I backed Kuchar at 100 to 1 with 8 places. You can get him 125 with fewer places. But I've gone for the 8 place option. I think that's probably safer. The thing with Kuchar, and we've talked about this a lot over the years, he's the kind of player that progresses to a strong finish and potentially then a win. So when I'm seeing progressive form of 34th at the Wells Fargo and 17th last week at the Charles Schwab, I see numbers that are heading in the right direction, and that is very Matt Kuchar. And then to see him progress from there to maybe a 7th or a 5th or something like that wouldn't be out of kilter whatsoever, I don't think. Now, he was competitive at the back end of last year, 7th at the 14th. He was 2nd at the WWT Championship as well. 4th here back in 2019 when they played in this course. And he led after the 2nd and the 3rd rounds. It was only the final round where Rory absolutely motored ahead. But up until that point, Kuchar was right in the mix. And loves playing in Canada. He's got 5 top 4 finishes from 17 starts that I counted yesterday. 3 wins on bent grass. He was 2nd in your strokes gained putting tracker as well for recent strokes gained putting performances. Like short courses, it all added up for me. I know he's, you know, in a world where a lot of these younger players are starting to come through, the old guard are kind of being, you know, almost crowded out of the equation, but perhaps there's still a little bit of life left in Kuchar yet, and he can sneak a place for us at 3 figures. We shall see. Yeah, so that's it for me. Kim, Kuchar, and Buckley as well.
Any more for you, Barry?
No, I think I kind of maxed out at 900 to 1 on Kisner.
I can see that. I think that's us, chaps. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best luck, boys.
You too, boys.
It's been an emotional show. I hope that your bets go well, listeners, and your DK teams and all this kind of malarkey. We will be back next week. Paul, what's on your agenda for next week?
It's the Volvo Mixed next week. So let's hope we get a winner this week.
And we have the Memorial Tournament at Jack's Place. Always a highlight of my PGA Tour year. See you again soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf.